This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The Hateful Eight is over, and Ipswich go head-to-head with runaway record-breaking leaders Leicester and get themselves a point in response to that disappointing Elland Road drubbing. Welcome to a very Christmassy Blue Monday podcast. David Diamond, is it possible to deserve a point, but to get it in the 92nd minute with a shot that takes two deflections?
It was wonderful. Wonderful, wasn't it? It's about time something like that happened to us, wasn't it? Is it about time? Someone posted on our Telegram chat earlier, they thought that the last minute goal of any meaning or to get an equaliser was the Fleetwood incredible deflection of 13, 14 months ago now in the dimmer distant past in League One. So, it was much needed on the night. And dare I say, I think on our second half display, richly deserved.
Joe, it's a difficult one to analyse, isn't it? Because when you come away from a last minute equaliser, you tend to have a bit of confirmation bias with what sort of happened. We'll get into the minutiae of the game. How did you come away from Portman Road feeling?
I thought we fully deserved the point that we got there. I think it would have been unjust had we lost that game 1-0. I think it would have been not a travesty, but I think it would have been unfair had we not picked up a point out of that game. And it would have been really frustrating having sort of put in a poor performance on Saturday against Leeds to then lose again and sort of lose back-to-back. And then all of a sudden the big pressure's on the squad, isn't there?
Absolutely. And welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Merry bloody Christmas, everybody. What? Actually, let's quiz the two guys. What day of the week is it, you two?
Tuesday. Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. It is Wednesday. A Christmassy Wednesday. If you are in the chat on a Christmassy Wednesday, welcome. Get your views in. We'll put as many of them up on the screen. We'll go full Q&A. We've done Christmas. We've done the Hateful Eight, so you can give the stream a lovely big thumbs up. And if you're listening after the fact, we appreciate you. And Dave, a guy came up to me and said hello yesterday. He said, Ben, you don't know me, but I'm Kev, the guy who way back in the podcast bunker days used to work a night shift and would request that we would upload the podcast.
Let's say
hello to Kev. And let's say happy birthday to the one, the only... He's with us, but no longer with us. Harry from effing Bath. Someone we're going to be... Do you want to do Morsi or Scarlett?
I guess Scarlett. He seems more up my street on that side of it, where we spoke about his loan spell on Sunday, how it's sort of been badly managed from Tottenham with regards to holding on to him too long, playing him in the League Cup so that he's cup tied and missed sort of any chance to get into the team. And now we're in a position where he's effectively still our player. We could probably do with a striker, but he's now already gone back and he's going to not be here for the FA Cup game next Saturday where he would have got a start in the game. And it just seems it's just been a total failure of a loan move, really, hasn't it, for one reason or another. Well, I guess there's blame to be apportioned from all parties, but I don't think that Tottenham did him any favours by holding on to him for so long and then giving him half an hour in a League Cup second round game, which then meant effectively he didn't get here till late. He then missed two potential starts he would have got because he was then cup tied for it, and now he's going to go back in January to cover a few injuries and Son going away, and now he's going to end up not playing any football in the second half of the season, you'd imagine.
Realistically, Dave,
one split opinion when it says it's going to be a few I told you so's in the chat about the Scarlet move not working out. And Dave, we're going to get into some commentary from you guys on why having a striker over the next few weeks, hopefully a shorter period as possible, is going to be absolutely vital. But sorry, Dave, cut you off.
Yeah, I mean, it's an odd one with Scarlett because clearly McKenna rates him extremely highly given his previous comments. And Joe's right. I don't think it's been handled brilliantly, both sides, particularly Tottenham's side, because, you know, as Joe said, why hang on to him so long? And then why, you know, play him in the League Cup? So realistically, he'd have had, how far do we get? He would have had three games with us. Plus, yeah, chances are certainly Saturday week, a cup game at Wimbledon. Let's face it, it's going to be I know Spurs have had some injuries and Son is off, but look, let's face it, he's not going to get any game time there, is he? Realistically, he's not. So, yeah, you got to feel sorry for the lad. With the happening, well, we'll get on to the happenings of last night and why, that in a minute, I guess, and why perhaps it would have been useful to have him around now. But, yeah, I think as Joe said, a bit of both from both sides, really.
I'll allow it. It's Christmas Day. Yeah. I'll allow it.
You've gone back early and there's not really been much comment about it from either the club or him as to why, where effectively if he was on the bench last night, he'd probably got 70 minutes if he'd have been on the bench last night and probably 50 minutes on Friday night and again at Stoke on Saturday. Or Monday, whatever day that is, and then he could be recalled. Because at the moment, it's up to us. He's our player until the next registration window opens, isn't he? So we're obviously happy for him to go back, which seems obviously tells a story as well with regards to how much we don't feel that we need or want him for even the next couple of games, let alone longer term.
It's another one of those, isn't it? In those little cameos that he did have as sub and stuff like that. It was a couple of things against Millwall. He's really unlucky not to score. He's, you know, one of these lads, you know, needed a goal, any sort of goal. Who knows?
That'd have given him the lift. West Brom had a good shot, didn't he?
West Brom. Oh, crikey, yeah, West Brom. You know, he'd have been off and running, but just for one reason or another, just hasn't happened. Well, obviously, Hurst's good form and the style we play with Hurst as the focal point there. That just, you know, just wasn't going to work for him.
David. Sam Morsy has been given a one-game ban with immediate effect. Town's captain has been charged with a breach, and you're very familiar with this, Dave, with your profane language, of FA Rule E3, subsection 1, following our victory at Middlesbrough on 9th of December. That's a bloody bit of a blow, isn't it?
Mate, that came just totally out of the blue, didn't it? Although I think, did you not say, Joe, that you'd heard some sort of whisper about something?
Well, someone messaged me saying that basically there's been an incident with Morsy and a referee, but he said it was after the, like in the car park after the Norwich game, he'd been told. And we'd sort of concluded between us that doesn't really make any sense because there's always fans out at that time. Somebody would have seen it if there was something going on there. And then when it comes out, I looked at it and then it said the Middlesbrough game. So yeah, it must have been something that happened up there. But it's when he got that late booking, which he shouldn't. No, it's for kicking the ball away. He sort of passed it someone like 10 yards away. And it was never a yellow. But now that yellow has become so costly for us because it's put him on a tightrope for the last three games. Or four games, isn't it? It's Watford as well. Put him on a tightrope for four games. He's ultimately got a one-game suspension from it, as is. And he's still going to get a two-game suspension at some point as well. So it's really, really bad news for us.
I suppose the other thing, I guess, how it's broken now, I mean, it could have broken just prior to Christmas or something, may well have missed yesterday's game, and let's face it, second half, he was absolutely immense. Well, goal aside, he was absolutely immense. But
shut the office, Dave, didn't they? They're only back in today. So
that's disconnect. I remember in the dim old days at ITMU, no, spoiler alert, we used to disconnect the fax machine if there were claims coming in and stuff like that. So, you know, usual practice, really. So disclaimer. But it was, no, it is a blow. I mean, no disrespect to QPR. Fortunately, it's QPR. I'd rather him miss, I think, QPR at home, certainly, than Stoke away New Year's Day, I think. So, I mean, well, no doubt we'll get onto this later, but I'm pretty sure we'll see the Taylor-Luongo axis in there, I would have thought. When he missed Huddersfield, I think Evans played in that game, didn't he? I believe he drafted in Evans for that one. He's obviously not available. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what way we go. But, yeah, as Joe quite rightly said, you know, even to miss him for one game, it's a miss. But yeah, you know, like I said, chances are there is a chance, albeit we hope a slim chance, that he may disappear with Egypt in January. And then, you know, you are left with perhaps, well, at the moment, Taylor Luongo, Don Ball, and Humphreys as well.
It has so we'll been see. Don Ball that's come on for him as sub in recent games, hasn't it? When he's been going off a bit early, it's been Don Ball. And almost like Taylor and Luongo are the left-sided player and Moore's in Don Ball on the right. So maybe it will be Don Ball.
It that's felt like he was living a bit of a charmed life and getting away with it, didn't he? So as much as I love him, it's caught up with him in the end, Dave.
And Don Ball against his old club as well, which would be interesting, of course. You're right, Ben.
Yeah. Right, let's move on to last night. And obviously the context of this really went up, down, everything with Leeds hammering us. But then at lunchtime, I'm sure we're all tucking into our leftovers and a gigantic favour from Preston. But then pesky old Southampton just cruised in 5-0. We'll get onto this when we look at it properly when we go through the results. So certainly a big favour from Preston beating Leeds. But the last game of the Hateful Eight run, which I'm worried about hyping this up because this can only end in us having some crap results in some easy games on paper. Now I'm bigging up the end of this, but was Leicester City at home? Let's bang through your teams there. My apologies, FootMob doesn't seem to be working. I am on SofaScore today. I know lots of you complain when we change anything, even like a font heading on the podcast. So my apologies in advance for those people who don't like change. That's all of us. Let's go with Joe then. Hladke, Clark, Wolfenden, Burgess, Davis. So Clark keeping that right back spot. And Tuan Zabe steps out and Wolfenden returns. Jack Taylor in over Luongo with Morsi. Burns, Chaplin, no Broadhead. Harness in from the beginning. George Hurst in from the beginning. Joe, I got 10 out of 11. Again, I had Broadhead over Harness, but I got the rest of them right. Did you?
Yes, yeah, same as you. But we'd had a lot of talk in the Telegram group about whether Marcus Harness might be a better fit for this game, because it was going to be a game where off the ball ability was probably going to trump on the ball ability. And I say it by the end of the game, it looked a really smart decision to have played Marcus Harness, because I think you could easily made him, if not man of the match, one of our sort of two or three best performers. I thought he was excellent and just exactly what we needed in disrupting them playing out from the back.
Right, let's do this. I never want to be patronising to our listeners, but I heard some rather odd conversations on the Pioneer Concast, not with David Diamond, who I spoke to at halftime. But let's just explain, Dave, what the Leicester team shape is when they're attacking and how you may or may not set up to defend against it, because this might be important when it gets to the goal, and how blame can be situational rather than football fans wanting it to be, right, I want to blame one player for this goal. Who can I blame? But so they're 4-3-3 without the ball, Dave. But essentially, the goalkeeper goes into the back four. The right back goes in front of the back four. So that becomes a stretched out back three with a two in front. And then basically, no word of an exaggeration, Dave, they get five up front, and you can get plenty of stills of Mavididi really wide on one side. Fatawu, who defended Davis quite well, strangely, actually, didn't he? Really wide on the other side. And Dewsbury Hall and Wilfendidi, really not high number eights, like number 10s. Anyway, that's the team.
They were so wide as well, weren't they? Especially Dewsbury Hall.
It was quite something to watch. I really enjoyed it, actually. But Dave, let me just bang through. So Hermansson, Pereira, who's in central midfield most of the game. Cody Vestergaard, face with his cigar, his slippers, his frizzy hair and his dressing gown. Winks, Dewsbury Hall and Didi, Mavididi, Fatawu and Daka. Dave, your thoughts on that in possession team shape and just the quality of that 11?
Yeah, that is good. And they're very easy on the eye, particularly in the first half, as we said at half time. They're very fluid, I think, is perhaps a good word. Very, very, like I said, easy on the eye in the transition. And Fouls was having a lovely old time on the ball, you know, just getting the ball out of his feet and stroking it across to his other fullback and stuff. So it was, I think I read somewhere Vestergaard's had the most touches of any player in the championship again. But you know, there were signs in that, well, we'll get to the goal in a minute, but there were signs in the first half that they certainly could be got at. And I think we'll certainly get onto that. But yes, certainly Fouls didn't look that comfortable. Once or twice when Burns did get a chance to run at him. So, yeah, they were certainly, lovely on the eye, easy in possession, but certainly not infallible.
Joe, can we just set the context clearly here? I've been saying this all season. I say the same about Southampton, but Leicester even more so. This is not a normal relegated team, even for a year one parachute team. We normally get, Joe, teams that have circled the drain for a while and dropped down, or teams that are yo-yoing. This is the team that's finished fifth in the Premier League twice in the last 5 years, won the FA Cup. If we go back a little bit further, they won the bloody title. And obviously, in a sort of 18-year run, have basically accumulated a squad of players that are, in the main, worth 20 to 30 million. So it's a very weird team. Had one bad season in a weird outlier season where all three of the promoted teams stay up. Do you agree with my take on Leicester just being an anomaly for this division?
Yeah, they looked on paper in the summer, they looked like they could be an anomaly when you looked at the squad. And now you look at the league table and, yeah, that they were. You sort of looked at them, it's like, can they be as good as they look on paper? And, well, they have been that and better when you look at the sort of flurry of records that they're knocking down by the week. And I'd say you look at the squad, and I think if that team was in the Europa League, you'd expect them to get probably to the quarterfinal of it, wouldn't you, when you see the central midfield. Like, Ndidi was linked with Barcelona, wasn't he? And Dewsbury Hall looks like a player who should be playing for a top eight
Liverpool
Premier League team. He's been linked that sort of team. Mavididi, sort of a funny one, because he went away to France, and he wasn't one that was mega highly rated, and he's come back, and I thought he's looked excellent. But yeah, like, face is a Belgian international, Vestergaard, Danish international. Cody was in England World Cup squads. Harry Winks has played for England a number of times and is...
They're like 20 England caps, Joe.
10 million. Yeah, that is not a championship team, is it? That is a serious, serious quality team. And I say, I think it's a measure of how far we've come that we really went toe-to-toe with them, and we followed... It's probably the two best tacticians in the league, and we were... Like, Dewsbury Hall was playing on the flank and Jack Taylor was right out on the flank with him, leaving Sam Morsy with the whole middle of the pitch to look after on his own, which he did admirably. And yeah, but there were times when Ndidi would run off Morsy's shoulder and they seemed to switch those two because they seemed to notice he could get some joy on that side. And there was there, but I think we had our... It almost worked out that their left winger, Mavididi, was their player that got free. And our right winger, Wes Burns, was a player that got free. And it was who was going to come up with a big moment of quality out of those two players, wasn't it? And obviously, spoiler alert, in the first half, we know where that went.
Well, take me through the goal, Dave. I'm being a bit facetious. We always defend everybody's right to have an opinion, whether that's on the show or in the chat. But I think there's a slight misunderstanding, if I'm not being patronising, about what was actually happening. Joe's categorised it quite well. Dave, when they were playing through and Hermansson setting up the attacks, genuinely, you didn't know where to shift your team, and they were able to switch one side to the other. And just before the goal, Dave, two or three times, you saw if they pass through that first line of press and switch the play, we are massively open on either side. And before you answer quickly, Dave, I said to the bloke next to me, what would Mick McCarthy do setting up against these wide players here? Where would the right midfield be there? And I'm quite pro what we're doing because I know what the alternative would be in the defensive setup. But Dave, talk to me about the goal. Sorry, I've waffled on.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, there's some position around the back four. I think probably Faust passes it. No doubt to Vestergaard, who then finds Cody. And it's a good ball, isn't it? It's a proper, meaningful ball. He drives it into, I think it's this... who's he driving? I'm trying to think. Dakar, isn't he? Yeah, Patson Dakar, I think. Who spins... It's an odd one because he kind of spins... He kind of spins Burgess, but Burgess almost seems, he's not really tight to him. He almost seems distracted by, I think, Ndidi, who's perhaps just run off him a bit. It's quite an odd one. So I thought when I saw it in real time, I thought, bloody hell, what a turn that is. But it's not really, because sort of Burgess sort of like is half caught between him and Ndidi. And then you're right, yeah, we're narrow. Clark has followed a run inside. And as soon as the ball was switched to, is switched wide to Mavididi, yeah, I mean, he's on the apex, on the edge of the 18-yard box, left side. Just gets it out of his feet, cleverly uses Clark as a shield and bends it in. I won't say bends it in the far corner because I know you're not going to have that. But, yeah, bends it in.
No, Dave, sorry. You've nailed it by saying he uses Clark to one side.
Yeah, he does.
So I think having watched it back, I was a bit cross at halftime, ladies and gentlemen, with Fladkey, but having watched it back, Dave's totally right. He stitches like, and you know Mavididi's got that shot where he gives it the eyes the far corner and then goes in the other corner anyway.
It's a quality strike. I saw the Sky after I taped it and recorded it and watched it on Sky. I've watched it back on Sky just really to see the comments on it. And Schwarzer thought came across quite well. Having a goalkeeper summarised it, and he basically said he thought his starting position perhaps wasn't great. Perhaps he's with a mind that perhaps Mavididi could, so good, he could go either way. He didn't want it to whip it inside the near post. So perhaps his weight favoured his right side. And by the time he took his shot, it was perhaps too late. And again, he was perhaps unsighted by Clark. And also he said perhaps, in his opinion, Fleckie could have gone with his top hand rather than his bottom hand. But I mean, I think they're small points. I think you just got to look at it. It's a very good goal, really.
Well, what's your take, Joe?
Yeah, similar to Dave, really. And there was another point in the Telegram. I think Kevin Ellis in the Telegram said also, sort of from the start of it, Marcus Harness sort of goes to press at the start of it when he's got no one near him. So effectively, he's easily passed around because he goes to press on his own. So effectively, that opens it up. Then Burgess goes. Ndidi's run off Morsey.
Yeah.
Clark comes in. Burns isn't able to get back with Mavididi. And I think like any goal you can see is generally a team issue, isn't it, where the team has been pulled apart slightly. And when we look at the way we play, and you see Wes Burns getting loads of room down the right, Leif Davis popping up as a spare man on the left when he make a lung busting run, they're not individual errors which cause these things. It's just good play, third man runs, sort of quick passes, quick switches, and there is always going to be a spare man on the pitch somewhere. And you see that with the goal we scored, and where Connor Chaplin pings it right over to the other side of the pitch when he drops in there. And it's just like he knew that there was going to be one extra person pressing inside. So there's a spare man over there. And ultimately, it's almost like NFL-like, isn't it, where you have these plays drawn up and everyone has to know their role and pops out there. And
I reiterate, sorry to interrupt, Joe, this is a team willing to put five up front and bring their goalkeeper into the back four to get an overload.
Yeah, they're just looking for new ways to find overloads, and you're not going to be able to stop a team like Leicester getting them at some point in the game. Like teams can't stop us from getting them during the game, and we'll get them, they'll get them, and it's just ultimately it still takes an excellent strike from a tough position for the goal to go in, and that's football when you play against these quality teams.
Yeah.
Joe, I saw Leicester on the opening day play at Coventry, and they weren't really with it. I knew what Maresca was going to try and do beforehand because I'd read up on him and the similarities with Manchester City. And they couldn't quite do it on the first day. It's very easy to sit with Leicester and say they've got an incredible squad and brilliant players, which is true. And that does kind of help you when you're not purring because you've just got so much quality that even if you're not really at it as a team, your quality will still get you through. I'm going to make a statement, Joe. I do one every week. I think it's a favourite with the listeners. West Brom, I still think, controlled us the best out of anyone. Leeds, in terms of attack. But for about 10, 15 minutes in that first half, I thought Leicester were really good. Really, really good in terms of the questions they were asking us and the way they set up. And I think in possession and patterns of play, I know we're spoiled with ours. I thought they're the best team we've faced in that regard, Joe. What's your take?
Yeah, and I think it's quite interesting just the way that, like we do, that they adapt during the game. Because at the start of the game, you obviously had sort of George Hurst playing through the middle, Burns on the right, Davis on the left, and they were struggling to stop all three routes from us playing out. But once George Hurst went off and Kaden Jackson went in, you know that Jackson isn't able to effectively drop in and start play from that position there. So they were willing to leave that sort of central position open and totally swamp the two wide players so that you just couldn't get the ball to Burns and Davis. It's like they're happy to just change mid-game and say, look, we now no longer need to stop three routes out from the back. There's now only two routes out from the back and we're just going to totally stop those and leave the other one because we don't think they're going to hurt us in that one. And when you're looking for overloads and when you're looking for sort of any small advantages, being able to just leave an option is so key. And like I say, you just put up a comment there about how many blocks Leicester had against us. That's probably the thing I've noticed most about them when I've watched them on the TV a few times this year, is that they haven't always looked that good, especially at the start of the season. But whenever the other teams seem to get the ball in the box, they seem to have six or seven players around them and they seem to block so many shots because they seem to get bodies back so quickly into position. And when you watch the game in the crowd, it's quite frustrating because you keep having these shots, they keep getting blocked, you don't get shots away. And then all of a sudden I was remembering, oh, actually, yeah, but I've seen this on TV play out a lot of times. This is how they play. They funnel you into the middle, but then they funnel you into a load of space where we try and funnel teams wide. They tend to funnel centrally and get bodies there to block it. So it's sort of all interesting seeing it play out actually in-game, what you've been watching on TV.
Helps when your centre-backs are really good individually as well, doesn't it? Dave, I'm not labouring the point, but I think it's important, and you can talk about George Hurst in a minute. I think it's important because you see the upside. I did think we see 4-4 fifth gear in the first half for about 10 minutes of Leicester. I think it speaks to how well we then did in the second half, given that could have gone a 2-3-0 game if they'd have had another 20 minutes like that in the second half. Where do you rank Leicester in with the sort of teams we've faced, Dave? And talk to me about George Hurst.
Yeah, I mean, I think along the lines of what Joe said, yeah, I think they're probably the best we've seen at Portman Road. And I think, as you said, Ben, West Brom bullied us, I think, more than anything. But yeah, for pure football, I think Matt just posted something there that it was real for a neutral. What a great game to watch. You know, tactically astute. Yeah, they're tactically astute, both McKenna and, you know, playing the 4-2-3-1 against the 4-3-3 or the fluid 4-3-3 is a real eye-opener and tactically fantastic to watch. I mean, George Hurst, as soon as he did it, he just hyper-extended. I mean, you must have had a good view of that, Ben. Absolutely hyper-extended.
There's no such thing as a good view of that, Dave.
No, I mean, at first I thought, worse still, thought, Christ, if that's his knee, that's a bad one. But that's unfortunately because hamstring, you know, mild knee tweak, hamstring could be just as bad if it's a proper tear. So we'll find out more. I think he's going for a scan. But yeah, you just lose that. You lose that focal point. Was a surprise, perhaps, Jackson came on. Don't know, really. You know, I think perhaps because of his pace and his energy, just to perhaps, put those centre-halves, make those centre-halves perhaps a little bit more comfortable than the period they'd been enjoying up to then. So maybe I can see something in that. And I thought, by and large, he performed that role pretty well, to be fair. Not really a threat, but I thought he did quite well in that respect. But yeah, as a focal point, Hurst will certainly be a miss, definitely.
Joe, I want to go back to my point now as we get into the second half about kind of judging this not just by what we know happens in the 92nd minute. What were your thoughts at halftime? Because Dave and I had a chat, I know what his were, and we were both saying, just stay in the game. Stay in the game. Don't let it go 2-3 and see if you can build up some pressure. We're not always right, by the way, because that's what happened. But this could have got away from us in the second half. And you can now build into a really encouraging second half performance.
Yeah, but you basically needed to stay one goal behind them, didn't you, at worst? Because if it went to 2-0, you're then in similar to that Leeds game on Saturday where they can just keep picking you off on the break. And ultimately, we were causing them issues at the back when we went forward. We were winning set pieces. And it only takes a good set piece or a twice deflected 25-yard shot to fly into the goal, and all of a sudden being one goal in it, and you've earned yourself a point, and you just couldn't let that chance of 1 point pull away from you, could you? And as much as you wanted to get a goal early on, but I thought sort of whilst they had their spell, I thought for the last sort of 20-25 minutes, I thought we really took over the game and really pushed them and punished them, and all the subs came on and made differences at the right time. Sort of physically, they all came in and gave us a bit of a lift. And for Leicester, again, I sort of harking back, I've watched them quite a number of times on TV this year, and they're a side that sort of has absolute control of these games, it seems, in the second half. So they just totally stopped other teams from doing anything. And I didn't think from an hour onwards they had any real control of that game yesterday. I think they were trying to get control of it, and they just couldn't get control of the game.
Strange move. And did he have an injury or something?
He got yellow carded and went off almost instantly after that.
You're right, he got yellow carded. That was an interesting one. I mean, because they certainly lost impetus after that. Only other point I make about yesterday, our corners were poor. Our set plays were poor yesterday, I thought. Really, 11 corners. I mean, I know that there's some serious, they had three centre-halves. You got Cody and Vestergaard, their units there. But I thought our delivery from set plays yesterday was really poor. Don't know what you guys thought.
We had
Burgess won the near post header. But I think that aside, not great.
There was one in the first half as well, where Burns sort of gets to the ball first and tries to sort of head it across, but ends up just hitting it totally the wrong part of his head and heads it straight behind. So I guess we maybe have three or four first contacts, which is a help, but I don't know.
I just thought the overall delivery weren't great. I thought Waggon was back, Ben, for a minute.
Oh, that is disgusting. It's Christmas Day, for God's sake. In the 75th minute, I sit exactly where the hard camera is at Portman Road. Kiernan Dewsbury Hall goes through and he goes down. And I think my words with a few expletives were, oh God, here we go. This is going to be a penalty. That was my first instinct. I know it's easy as a football supporter, Dave, to watch it back 20 times to try and persuade yourself it wasn't a penalty. What was your first instinct and your thoughts since on whether Leicester should have a penalty on 75?
Yeah, I think. Is it me? Was that not fairly remarkably similar to Davis on Somerville on Saturday? It wasn't totally different from that, was it? Perhaps there was more of a tangle of legs with Davis and Somerville on Saturday, but again, if it was the other way around, it was Burns going through or a Chaplin or a Broadhead and Vestergaard or someone brought them down, you'd have been screaming for that one. And yeah, this contact there, he leans on him, doesn't he? And it's one of those ones, the old cliche. Certainly seen those given. Joe, you'd have had a pretty great view of that one, or perhaps, well, forward on, perhaps not quite so much, but it was, there was contact there. And certainly, again, Sky being Sky, I think every one of their punters thought it was fairly nailed on.
Yeah, behind everyone around me thought it was. And I think it's just that it looks like Burgess is going to go shoulder to shoulder with him, which isn't a foul, but Dewsbury Hall just gets in front of him. So rather than being shoulder to shoulder, it's sort of shoulder into the back effectively, isn't it? But I think maybe I personally thought it was a penalty, but I can see why it's not been given, because they do seem to sort of have a higher bar for did he need to go down for it? Was he playing for it? Did he slow himself down just to take the contact? Had him going down when Burgess clearly won the ball in the first half, got in the ref's head that he was going down quite easily. Yeah. I think there's enough factors that you can see why it was given. But my view was, it probably was a penalty.
I think you're right. I think that first half where Burgess makes a brilliant challenge, doesn't he? Clearly wins the ball. Maybe that perhaps gets into the ref's head. Maybe.
I'm going to go with Joe on this one because he's closer. Was it a deliberate attempt to play the ball by Burgess? Would it have been a red card or a yellow?
I guess it would be a red on that basis, because
if it's the hand.
Well, you can't try and play the ball in a shoulder to shoulder, can you?
I guess
there is an argument that you're going for the ball and you're just trying to have your path there. So I think a red would have been a bit harsh on it in the same way. But Leif Davis didn't get anything on Saturday, did he? That was could have easily been seen in the same vein. But yeah, I would have been surprised had a red come out as well. But I guess it's hard to know exactly how that double jeopardy rule works.
Yeah, quite.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So you've already mentioned the subs, guys. So we get Broadhead, Hutchison and Luongo in around the 18-minute mark and Ladapo in. And Joe, it's just a really... this is what you want to see from your team. When you're 1-0 down, we all say it in the stands, oh, well, you may as well lose 2-0 down and just go for it, you know, attack. And I did honestly think we're not getting any from this because of the point that's already been made in the chat there. Individual centre-backs were so good and just, you know, maybe it's a tactical thing like you've mentioned, Joe, just blocking everything. And we just could not force that big opening, Joe. Did you have confidence as we went to stoppage time that an equaliser was coming?
I think the big opening, it seemed to be the one that Chaplin put over the bar. And I don't think it was as good a chance as it looked at the time from the south stand end. It looked like that was almost a clear shot of goal from about 15 yards, but it looks a lot harder when you see it back on the replay. But yeah, and then you sort of have that, and then you get the corner in stoppage time and Hutchison and Davis try a short one, and all of a sudden the ball ends up behind for a goal kick, and you just think, this isn't going to happen. No, we really deserve something, but it isn't going to happen. And then I say it's fairly unlikely. That Cassaday that came on for them instead of Ndidi was a real drop-off in quality, wasn't he? And I think he's the one that sort of ends up giving the ball away for it to get out to the throw, and then Morsey turns him quite easily and just drives to the ball. But yeah, a left foot swinger from there, it really was a swinger, wasn't it? You don't expect that to go in, but as soon as it hits the defender's head, you can see the keeper on the other side of the goal.
He's done.
It's just going in.
Yeah, it was exactly. I mean, what I would say, the subs made a hell of a difference, I thought, last night. It just gave the team that extra lift again, didn't it? Luongo, I think. Not that Taylor had a bad game. And Taylor's certainly one that improved as the game went on, you know, one or two driving runs from midfield. But I thought Luongo came on and, you know, again, got hold of the ball again. We started to get a little bit more control. And Hutchison as well, that short corner aside, Hutchison did very well. Got round face, you know, once or twice. So, and Broadhead had a good chance again, didn't he? Some great interplay there. And Broadhead, I think he gets that back on his right foot. He probably slots that in the far corner, but slips. So the sub certainly, I think, made a difference. But yeah, certainly a left foot swinger. And what's the old saying? I think Hermansson would have thrown his cap on it had it gone through to him. But yeah, there you go. So, yeah, happy days. 93+1. Oh, my word. And the crowd erupted.
Do we need to keep quiet about celebrating draws, Joe, after comments made on this very same podcast in the past couple of weeks?
Well, I think you're still celebrating the goal at that point. You weren't celebrating hanging off a half an hour to go 21 points behind your rivals.
It was a context last night, wasn't it? I think it was a relief. You know, you didn't want to go, you know, lose those two games without scoring as well. And yeah, you know, bubbles burst, bubbles gone, they've gone, this is it, you know, just wait for it. We knew it was coming. But that, I think, in the overall scheme of things, will prove to be a really, really important point last night.
Final summings up on Leicester, Joe?
Yeah, just a good game, a game that we got out of it what we deserved. And I think it was a performance as well that was, should really make people sit up and take note that we're not going anywhere this year. And I think there was good performance all over the pitch, but I think especially one noted about was sort of how good Luke Wolfenden was last night, playing in that centre role, effectively just being there against that team in transition, just stopping everything and being everywhere and passing from the back. I thought that was a real sit up and be noticed performance by him, and that would have, like I say, he looked every inch a Premier League defender, I thought, last night, and that's probably the best he's played. When he almost needs to be really pushed to play better, doesn't he? And I thought he was really on his game last night.
Dave, I think they'll win the league at a canter. There's no doubt about that.
How can they not? If they don't, something's gone severely wrong there. Yeah. But Dave, bit of messaging I thought from Kieran McKenna. I think he sounded a bit fed up of people saying that he should have been more defensive at Leeds, and was very keen in all of his post-match interviews, and I have listened to all of them, to say, no, this is the way we want to play, and that's vindication because we did it against Leicester and we've got a point.
Absolutely superbly well. I think brave with the ball, brave on the ball is the phrase, and we certainly were right through the piece last night. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, there were times in the second half when you think, surely we're not going to play. Surely he's got to chip it into midfield here, or chip it to Jackson or something like that. No,
get Naylor on.
Absolutely.
Kladke was running back to our own goal, and then he just like does a sort of left foot nutmeg through the striker.
There it is.
Then comes back and picks the ball up again on the other side, and it's just ridiculous. And one where he sort of saves it from going out for the corner, and he's sort of diving there. Like, he's just, I thought, considering Hermanson has been so highly rated and has had a really good season for Leicester, but it was a, what, £7-8 million strike goalkeeper. I thought Hladke's distribution was much better than his last night. Yeah, I thought he played well, but I thought distribution, I'm not talking about the whole all-round goalkeeping performance, but just on the ball, I thought Hladke was in a different class.
Interesting. Right, let's get across it, because we've got to preview QPR in this podcast as well. So let's immediately go to a word from our sponsors at Innovation Labs, and we'll get into what else went down in the Championship yesterday.
Innovation Labs is business hub and co-working space with strategic locations across Suffolk. Our aim is to foster innovation, entrepreneurship, business growth, and the development of an AI centre of excellence in Suffolk. Monthly hot desks are available from just £79. For more info, head to innovationlabsgroup.com or contact info@innovationlabsgroup.com. Innovation Labs, providing support for businesses across Suffolk. Locations in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, Woodbridge, with more to follow.
Oh, Foot Mob is totally brutalising me here. It was working. It's not working anymore. So I think I've got SofaScore up. As we look through the rest of the round 24 goings on, and as usual, lads, pick out anything you particularly want to. Coventry 2, Wednesday 0. Rotherham 1, Middlesbrough 0. Have a bit of fun if you want to look at the XG on that game. Watford 1, Bristol City 4. Bristol City moving nicely under Liam Manning. Hull 0, Sunderland 1. They are back in the playoffs. If you were to finish third, you might play Sunderland. West Brom 1, Norwich 0. Southampton 5, Swansea 0. That is 16 undefeated for Southampton in this crazy, crazy season, which feels a lot like last season in terms of the promotion race. It seems to be that whatever standard you set, someone will keep chasing you. Birmingham 1, Stoke 3. Another start for Stansfield. He doesn't seem to be being phased out there in any way, shape or form. I must have missed a couple of games off there. We missed the Leeds one. I need to press previous here. Where's Foot Mob when you need it, Dave? There we go. Preston 2, Leeds 1. Significant. Red card there for Melier as well. So I assume he's got some kind of suspension for the heinous crime of putting his hand in somebody's face. Millwall 2, QPR 0, which has some significance, obviously, for our next game. Cardiff 2, Plymouth 2, Huddersfield 3, Blackburn 0. Where did that come from? Anything you want to pick out there, Dave?
I mean, there's obviously the obvious one. There's the obvious one. The Leeds one. I don't think Farke would be very very pleased with his goalkeeper there. To be fair, it was fairly. I watched bits of that on and off, and it was sort of pretty even game right the way through. On a fairly pitch, looked a bit dreadful actually, but two really good goals from Preston. Great header from Brown, and then James gets a very, very dubious penalty, I've got to say. But my God, the winner from Miller was an absolute thronker, wasn't he? Cuts inside and absolutely hammers it in the far corner. So, yeah, after all the to-ing and fro-ing on our pod on Sunday, there you go. I think 7 points then became 8 after last night.
Did indeed. Joe, a word on Southampton, I think, might be important.
Yeah, they are rolling, aren't they? And they are the big winners of this period. And whilst we sort of feel in a sort of positive frame of mind because we got the point from Leicester yesterday and it felt a big point, ultimately at the start of this weekend, we had a 10-point lead to third, and it's now been cut in half to 5 points, hasn't it? So that's a big, big change. And Southampton have got quite a good run coming up over the next sort of 8-9 games. So it's really important that if we can sort of still be in the top two at the end of January transfer window, I think we're in a superb position. But that's a long way away as things stand at the moment.
I believe they've got Norwich next. I think they've
got on the Norwich.
They went
to us any favours.
This has never been said on this podcast before. Do you want to look back at what the Hateful Eight predictions were then, guys? Because this has actually been recorded. And this is what we said before this horrible run of games. So we in the end did score 14 points. So you can see I'm out by 2 there, underestimated it. So I'm happy. Joe overestimated it. So he's probably unhappy with 3 off Joe's 17 there. Mikey's 1 under. So he's the closest so far. Dave is grumpy like me. But look at Craig and Seb there. Slugs. Look at it. They've both got it right there. 14 points. They're 1.8 per game. Richard is 1 off as well. I know football's not played on paper. It's played on grass, Dave. But we have literally, apart from Southampton, played all of the parachute teams in this run, Dave. And we've played away at Watford, Middlesbrough, West Brom and Leeds. So you get these blooming Luddites that I just want to swear at that go, you play every team twice, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, yeah, but if you get horrible runs, you can really, really lose momentum there. So really pleased to have this over, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely superb. I mean, I think those 4 wins, that was the real character of the side after the really, well, let's face it, you know, the disappointing result against West Brom where we were completely really outplayed and, as we said, you know, bullied perhaps out of that game. I think we sat on this pod on that Sunday saying, oh, these next 2 games are important. They're very winnable games, which I think it was Millwall and Coventry at home, wasn't it? Very winnable games, but crikey, if we do win them, that really shows some character because we were beaten up at West Brom, no doubt about that. And we beat them, and then to then go on to Middlesbrough and Watford was just incredible. Leading up to the Norwich game, and I think I posted earlier, probably the biggest outlier in all those results amongst us, I guess most majority of us would have had us down for a win at home against Norwich, but obviously we know it wasn't to be. But yeah, 14 points from that run of matches is absolutely superb. And now we played Leeds twice. We've got 1 game out of the way against Leicester, so brilliant, superb.
Joe, your take?
Yeah, well, you look at that 8-game period, which everyone said, oh, this is when Ipswich are going to fall away. We've picked up the equivalent of an 83-point season over that period. So even in that, we're still like automatic promotion chasing form, even in that period of 8 games there. Like I say, I think we're still on track for over 100 points. We're still not going anywhere. So it is a real good position to be. This team is on its way, isn't it? And it's just, are we going to be able to accumulate enough points to hold off the two teams below us is the real question, isn't it? That's the only real question now.
Excellent. Right. Speaking of questions, get your questions in. Stick a Q in and a question mark before. Just a little apology there if you were in any way offended by the little impression I did a minute ago. There was no ill feeling or harm intended. I know people get upset by those sort of things and I regret doing that. So I do apologise sincerely. Please don't cancel me. And get your questions in right now. Where shall we look? Let's start with John here. And we'll go to Dave. Rather than replace Morsi for QPR, do you think we go with Taylor and Luongo and trust them? I've not been blown away by Ball as a holding midfielder either last season or this season when he's come on.
Well, Joe sort of touched on this earlier, whereby I think he said that perhaps he sees Luongo and Taylor as the left side of the central two, and perhaps Ball and Morsi are the right side. I think personally against QPR, I'd go with Taylor and Luongo. I think it will it be? Correct me if I'm wrong. It will be a first start in the middle. They must have started in the middle. No, they wouldn't have done, would they?
No, because
Evans played at Huddersfield. Yeah, Evans played at Huddersfield. So it'll be a new pairing. But I think those two should be able to work. I would have thought against QPR should be okay for that. I would have thought
they're not a particularly strong team in the middle of the park. QPR,
no, they're not.
They've got decent players like Chair and Willick, but central midfield they're quite a lightweight team there.
Well, they've got young Andres in central mid, isn't he? Young Andre will be there.
Feels good. I mean, we'll talk about QPR.
Feels good, yeah.
Joe, Neil, Hurst injury has now made striker even more important. So glad it's happened now and not a month ago. Every cloud, Joe.
I don't think it's even more important. I think we all knew how important this was straight away. It's been blind in the obvious that we've left ourselves short, really, in this role, in the same as we did last summer window where we signed sort of a Hadme right at the end and we were just waiting to January to try and get a strike in. It feels like we've been doing that the whole way through. Ladapo was fine in League One, was good in League One, but we needed somebody to rotate with him. Now we're in the position where Hurst is good in the Championship, but we're desperate for someone to rotate in with him. So it's been massive. But yeah, with Scarlett going back, and obviously we're not really putting too much of a fight up on that, it seems, and Hurst injured, we're too short now, aren't we? We're very, very much short, and even the sort of young, loney backup short as well, or someone like a Jay Stansfield who can pay nine or in any of the other roles as well.
Dave, Matt, question. Jackson or Ladapo to start versus QPR? It's a different question now, actually, because it's a different brief. Chase around after Leicester for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Ladapo started against QPR, actually. Yeah, I think wouldn't surprise me.
It's a game where we'd expect to sort of dominate possession and try and get the ball into his feet more, isn't it, as opposed to be chasing the ball around. So, yeah, I'd probably expect it to be him.
You would have thought so.
A couple of people are asking about the possibility of Broadhead playing up top. I don't really see McKenna. I think he'd go with a specialist, wouldn't he, Joe?
Yeah, I don't think Broadhead's got the athleticism to do what we need to do up front. That's a real heavy role to play up there as a striker. And he struggles to get through games even in a role on the sort of left-hand side where he's sort of given license to drift in and out of the game. I think if anyone was to play up there, almost someone like Marcus Harness would be a better bet than Nathan Broadhead, because he's got the physicality to get around up there. But I don't know, we'll see. But I can't see any of a Chaplin or Broadhead or Burns going up there. I think it would be Jackson Ladapo. And like I say, if it was anyone else, I think Harness is probably the most physically suited to that role.
I always read Norman's question, Dave. Surely in January we signed two strikers. What type of strikers do we go for? Number nine, or a versatile striker who can play in a number of positions, but it's not as good as Hurst in the number nine role.
Well, look, I mean, these names have been bandied about before, but you know, you're talking those two are number nine, or a versatile. You're talking perhaps Colby Bishop and a Jay Stansfield. There you go. There's two names that have been bandied about before, so that perhaps wouldn't surprise me. Personally, I'd love to find a space in our team for Morgan Whittaker somewhere, but I'm not sure that'll happen. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, incoming bid from Stoke now. Do we think? Well, we'll be seeing Mr. Schumacher very, very soon, won't we? But sooner than that, right? So it's Wednesday today and it's the 27th. We play on the 29th. So that would be Friday is when we play QPR. Now, this game has changed in difficulty, I think, because they were a very different looking outfit under Ainsworth. I'm not saying that they've had some kind of splurge of points now and, you know, they're much, much better. But it's a different challenge than it would have been under Ainsworth, and obviously we won that game at
But I think if you look at the form, Ben, the last they haven't scored in the last three games. They've stopped creating. They almost look blunter than they did under Ainsworth in the last two or three games after a big boost when he left. They look really solid after he left, but they've really hit a wall in the last few
games.
I looked at this earlier.
When he left at the end of October, they're just on the back of six straight defeats, I think, and they were 6 points adrift of Huddersfield. So 10 games in under the new man, they've won a few games. They won three on the spin, didn't they? Then just lost three on the spin, and they're now in exactly the same position, but only now are 5 points adrift of 5 points adrift of safety. So not too much has changed, other than obviously they have had the three wins.
Yeah, so you're right, Dave. And obviously that swung 3 points on Saturday, whatever day of the week it was when we played. But we've said this a million times on the pod. 3 points is a big swing down at the bottom of the table because teams record points so slowly. And we could almost, Joe, be having the same conversation that we would have been having under Mark Warburton in 21-22 QPR, when they were challenging quite handily at the top of the table. They got up to third place maybe 2-3 months out. That was the season where Huddersfield ended up taking third. And the comment was always, Joe, if Willock and Chair both play and they both play well, QPR have got a chance. And you're almost still saying the same thing now.
Yeah, basically. I just wonder, there's a little bit of talk of one of those two leaving with regards to sort of trying to free up some funds in January to try and shape the squad a little bit, just to balance it out. So maybe it's the chance that they don't play Chair. They might get a deal lined up from a need the fee or something like that for him. I don't think they played they didn't play Willock last night, did they? And he was on the bench, didn't come on, and they were only sort of 1-0 down for most of the second half. You think you'd get Chris Willock on, wouldn't you? So whether he's not quite fit or whether he's maybe one that's being sacrificed in the January window, it's hard to tell, isn't it?
Are you saying, Joe, that Chair might sit it out?
It's awful. It's absolutely awful, Dave. Get on to your phone, for goodness sake.
Stop it.
But, Dave, I'm always one to kind of be a bit cautious, but given what's happened and what we just discussed about Leicester, this is just a game after the Hateful Eight. You just have to win this game now, don't you?
Yeah, any old messy old 1-0, any old win will do, won't it? Yeah, especially without our talisman of a captain. Yeah, absolutely. It's quite interesting with QPR. Yeah, Willock's just hasn't been a regular, has he? Whether he has had, I'm not sure. Whether he has had... Seb should be sitting there, shouldn't he, with his intrinsic forensic research. But whether he's been injured or I don't know, but he's certainly been in and out of the team. And I saw Armstrong was fit, who causes no end of problems at Loftus Road. He was on the bench yesterday. Interesting enough, both didn't come on yesterday. So they both have got Willock on the bench, Armstrong on the bench. Both didn't come off the bench at all at Millwall. So that was a bit odd in itself, I thought, when looking back at what happened yesterday. But there is a threat. I mean, that Chair is a really, really talented. I quite like, as you said, I quite like Field. And the other, is it Smith, the other wide midfield? Always looks quite
Paul
useful.
Smith, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, always looks quite useful to me. So, and you know what Dizel's about. He's got to, you know, give him time. He's got a pass, hasn't he? He's got awareness. He's got vision. So it's not going to be, again, with that old cliche in the Championship, no game's an easy game. It's not going to be an easy game, but I think, you know, on paper it's a game I'd expect us to win. But looking at their side, they've certainly got players in that squad that can cause problems.
Joe, what's your 11 for this one then?
I'd probably keep it as much the same as you can do across the back of the pitch. Maybe a chance Brandon Williams might come in. He hasn't had a game for a little while, but I expect him not to. I expect to see Harry Clark play. And then I would probably go Luongo and Taylor, but I could understand going Ball and Taylor or Ball and Luongo in there. And maybe you want Broadhead to come back in because this is a game where you need to try and pick them as opposed to press them, which Harness did so well, and maybe a game even for Hutchinson to give Burns a rest. So it's one of those ones where I could see quite a few changes as we try and manage the squad through this period. But I think we should have enough to beat them. But it's like you say, it's, this is the championship now. This isn't League One. When you're playing the bottom teams in this league, you look and you see, like I say, if you see Ilias Chair and Chris Willick on the opposition team sheet, you know you're not in for an easy game.
No. And I think with Morsi not there, I think Luongo, especially as he didn't start, Luongo short to start, isn't he? I think it's just whoever plays alongside him.
I wonder if you go Ball and Luongo, two ex-QPR players, just to sort of have that little bit of extra.
I remember QPR beating us when Holloway was the manager and Luongo playing quite well. Where does this stand, Joe, on your rotation scale? Because you're normally talking about the middle game of the three, but it's like we've got four here now. So there could be a big rotate, couldn't they, before the trip to Stoke?
Yeah, but it was three changes last night, wasn't it? I wonder whether it's three changes again today, but three different changes, if that makes sense, for the next game to try and make sure nobody plays sort of too many minutes over the Christmas period. But we know Burgess, for example, is off after the Stoke game, so you probably just flog him a little bit, to be fair, because he's probably going to go to Australia and not play a lot of football for a month, so there's no point sort of trying to manage his minutes on that side.
You think Williams might get a game tomorrow on Friday? It's
difficult to know what's going on with him at the moment, isn't there, because he seems to be in one minute and out the next, and he's been out for quite a long time, and Harry Clark's taken his opportunity, I think. So I don't personally see Williams coming back in, but I wouldn't be surprised by anything, really, in this. out of our squad of players, I wouldn't be surprised if any of the changes are made.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, it's weird because we've been talking about this hard run of games, Dave, but I'm still feeling just need to get through to the end of the Stoke game, and you get the we said at time looking ahead at the last international break that the FA Cup weekend is almost like another international break. So even though you've run through this run of eight hard games, still get through this next two, and the challenge is four to 6 points, isn't it, Dave?
I think so. Get through. You've got the Wimbledon game, which it's the FA Cup, but we've seen the sides we can put out in the Carabao Cup, that it's going to be whatever side we put out is going to be competitive and should be good enough for there. And it gives you 14 days to get stuck into the window as well. So, if we are going to do business, which I think there's no doubt we are, if we can get that done early, then perhaps gives you time on the training ground for any newcomers before I should know, but I can't recall what is the next game coming up after Stoke. Someone will just put it down there in a minute.
It's a big silence. I think Joe's going to get there first. Ben's on the foot mob today.
And my internet's on the go today, but
Ben confiscated my phone.
I confiscated your phone, Dave.
Yeah, it did.
Hey-ho. Sunderland at home.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then back to Leicester.
And then Leicester again, isn't it? Yeah, crikey. Doesn't get any easier, does it? There we go. right, guys, I think that'll just about do us for our pod for today. Now, what is the schedule here? Because we've got another show tomorrow.
No.
Are we going out after the QPR game? I can't even remember what we agreed.
Yeah, I think we're going out after the QPR game.
Yeah, it's a post-match after QPR, yeah.
There we go. Right, live post-match reaction after the full-time whistle at QPR. And then on the second, we'll do the same thing. So we've basically got three shows like this in a row where, because we're so thick and fast at this time of year, we're having to review a game, preview a game, and on to the next. There we go. Guys, I'm sure we'll reflect. There's, one more game on this magnificent year, and we've done plenty of that already. But Joe, last word from you with one game of 2023 to go.
What a year.
David Diamond, you can have more than three words that Joe has.
Oh, thanks, Ben. Yeah, thanks. I just want to ask Joe, how did the Sprouts gratin go down?
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, it was good stuff. Maybe overdid the cheese as well. So it meant that everybody liked it, but it was good.
But yeah, as Joe said, what a year. If we can have a year half as good as 2023, I think we might just do it.
Unbelievable scenes. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Stick with us while the schedule's completely up in the air. We'll still try and keep the podcast coming. And we'll see you on, it's Wednesday, Friday, did we say Friday? Friday night, the 29th, after the QPR game, when it will be a day that ends in Y. There'll be lots of football matches. And we're going to talk about the one Ipswich play in. Over and out.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.